Welcome to MGO Radio 5. I'm going to say 11.
10. Close. Very close.
We are live,
like right there
from the Bow Store on Main Street. It is the day before the Indiana game. A palpable buzz in the streets.
Yeah, there was like a. there literally is a palpable buzz in the streets because, like, behind us, there's a jackhammer going on. So.
Yes, a literal palpable buzz in the streets. We thought we would bring in Steve Lorenzo 24/7 to talk some recruiting up front because we haven't done that in a while. How you doing, Steve?
Good. How you guys been?
I've been good. Thank you for asking. So one of the reasons we haven't talked about recruiting that much is that not a whole lot going on.
Right? Like, there's nothing.
But there was a major development a few weeks ago when Michigan's quarterback commit, J.D. Johnson, announced that he had to retire from football. And Michigan is now trying to get a quarterback in the class. There's one kid out of California, C.J. Stroud. Who is currently
out of Rancho Cucamonga,
Rancho
California?
Cucamonga. Sounds like where the Big Lebowski lives. Not the Big Lebowski, the dude. Anyway, so Michigan's
the Big Lebowski lives there too.
All right,
yeah.
Michigan's recruiting. They kind of came in late on this guy, but he's a little bit of a late riser, so everybody came in a little bit late. And one thing Michigan has in their favor is everybody else he's considering already has a quarterback in this class. So how do you think that C.J. Stroud's recruitment will play out, Steve?
Well, that's kind of a big ace up your sleeve, right? Granted, it depends on the kid. In situations like that, I always kind of remember, actually, of speaking of Southern California, when USC had then five-star Ricky Towne committed and a kid named Sam Darnold late at the very, not the very last minute, but kind of close to the last minute. USC made an offer and he was not one bit afraid of coming in and competing. So, you know, Stroud may be the kind of kid who doesn't really care if they have somebody else committed or not. He'll go to where he wants to go and, you know, with the confidence that he'll beat them out. But, you know, depth chart is still a thing. And, you know, Michigan has nicely had one per class and obviously they're going to look to take another one. Stroud at this point, still the only offer they've made since Johnson, you know, I had to step down. I had to medically retire. I assume this will be an official type thing. You know, he hasn't been to Michigan. Like you said, everybody kind of got in late on him, you know, so I don't think Michigan is, you know, that's not to their detriment that they got in a little bit later, not to mention they have a very legitimate reason for coming in late too, you know, so, you know, I would assume the kid, his camp probably understand that. So yeah, he'll be up on the 6th of December. We'll see. Great fit for the offense. You know, he's got these, bit of a dual threat type guy. I know our West Coast guy, Greg Biggins, compared him, at least his throwing style, to Deshaun Watson. I don't know if he really compared him to Watson as a player as a whole necessarily, but I do know he also said he thinks he's the third best quarterback in the country behind Ugalele, committed to Clemson, and then Bryce Young committed to Alabama. So, yeah, I mean, Michigan really likes J.D. Johnson a lot. With Stroud, they maybe have a chance to bring in a really big time prospect ahead of another one in JJ McCarthy, who's already committed and seems as solid as ever with his pledge.
Well, one interesting thing, you know, these days with all the transfer waivers going around and people grad transferring after 3 years, like Brandon Peters did. Like, I wonder if there's ever going to be like a break in the one quarterback per class. I don't want a quarterback in my class kind of thing. Cause you know, speaking from like Stroud's perspective, if Michigan already has a five-star in the 2021 right. class, like is that a better situation or a worse situation? You're ahead of the guy, but like if he beats you out, wins a job, that's like just transfer city. So like if there was a school that skipped out on a quarterback class, I might get in on that. And even if I had to be one of two
it's
or even
three.
It's a
very weird way to do it though. Like, I mean, you saw what happened to Michigan when we didn't have a quarterback in the class. Or, you know, Johnson had to medically retire. Like, there could be another.
There were a lot of reasons that Michigan's quarterback situation got bad.
Because it's a two-sided coin. I mean, because the transfer it's so easily accessible, and there are so many quarterbacks who do transfer. I still feel like kids are, at the end of the day, are still initially going to choose where they want it, where they feel most comfortable, and what the school that they like the most, because that's always something that's going to be in their back pocket. Especially, you've seen a lot of guys. Peter's becoming one of them. Guys like Brady White at Memphis. You know, kids who were recruited by bigger schools, didn't win the job, didn't come out win the job right away, didn't play as early as they maybe wanted to, and went on to some of these smaller schools. And still, you know, it's one of the effects of, like, there being so much film and there being so many eyes out there that you can go to a Bama or go to a LSU, something like that. Maybe you don't make, maybe you're not the number one guy. You can leave, go to a different school. You're still going to get legitimate looks, at, you know, at the pro level. And it's worked out for a lot of guys. So I'm not sure if it's a, it's kind of hard to know if it's a detriment or not, but it's always, you're right in that it's, if there is a school out there that did skip a cycle, that is going to be a huge advantage for them. I just don't know if it's in the school's interest.
Yeah.
To skip a cycle. You know, I mean, obviously right now, if you're Michigan, you want to add Stroud, you know, because he is elite. You're giving yourself a better hand, you know, to play with going forward. But there's a lot of nuances and stuff in there, kind of like you had said. It's just, it depends. But from the school's perspective, I don't think there's any advantage to skipping. Like you said, I mean, I know there were a lot of reasons Michigan's quarterback struggled, but
so,
you know,
if
you think about what they skipped, was it 14 where they skipped? After they took Shane in 13, right? And that was something that really, I think...
It was 12 they really skipped.
I knew there was, it was one of the cycles around Morris that they had skipped.
Yeah.
And it really, really, really hurt them, because then it puts a ton of pressure on that prospect to become the guy. And
so if,
I don't care how highly rated you are. You never, there's nothing to certain, you know, nothing is certain in that regard. So you want to stockpile as many as you can.
Sure. And so if Stroud does end up going elsewhere, is there any inkling of who Michigan might take a swing at? It probably at this point would be committed to a different school.
Right. There were a couple guys that I kind of would keep an eye out on. One was, there's a kid named Jeff Sims who's committed to Florida State right now. I think Michigan's made some cursory contact there. I know Sam, I think a couple weeks ago or a week ago, posted on a kid named Carl Richardson. I can't remember where he's from. But a lowly ranked prospect, a guy who kind of looks like a late bloomer type, has got some really good senior film. He's another one to maybe keep an eye on as well. I'm trying to think, there was somebody else too, but Sims was one committed elsewhere. Well, Florida State, it's open season right now until they figure out their coaching situation, in my opinion. So, you know, but also Sims still, though, is the kind of style that fits. You know, a lot of people have asked about Harrison Bailey at Tennessee. With Tennessee, I think, is still recruiting some other guys at quarterback. Not a fit for Gattis and what they're trying to do. I don't think that's somebody that they would entertain.
Because he's not mobile enough?
Yeah, he's not really a fit for what they're going to be looking for right now. You see what they've recruited. You know, McCarthy, at least, McCarthy's not a statue type quarterback. Bailey, much more of your kind of classic pro-style passer, and not a guy I think that they would ultimately look at again. So, yeah, I'm interested. You know, there's Jaden DeLora, too, is the other one, who is teammates with Roman Wilson, as a guy that Michigan, I think, was kind of giving some looks to. Ohio State offered him recently as well. He's committed to Washington State, which I would look at as a positive.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Leach knows what he's looking for in a quarterback, right? So he's another one to maybe keep an eye on. I'm mildly surprised that they haven't maybe offered somebody else, but I think they're in a position right now where I think they really want to make Stroud feel like he's, you know, their number one guy, the guy they really, really want, you know. And anytime those, some other schools are putting, you know, putting lines in the water elsewhere, that's some Michigan kind of keep in their back pocket when he comes to campus, you know, and say, hey, you know, you're literally the only guy we're really recruiting right now. Recruiting heavily.
So there's two other positions where it seems like Michigan is really actively pursuing prospects. Those are offensive tackle and cornerback. Offensive tackle is a little bit weird to me because Michigan took six guys in the last class.
Right.
They have Jeffrey Percy, who's a pure tackle in this class. It seems like, you know, they have the position kind of well in hand. And while I'm never opposed to taking more offensive linemen, you know, you'd think with numbers kind of getting thin, I would be piling in every secondary prospect I could find. But they clearly are after a tackle. And who's their best shot at one right now?
It still feels like Andrew Gentry.
Okay, but Gentry's a 2022 recruit, essentially, right?
Essentially, and I think that in a way, I think that's maybe a best case scenario too for them. Now, that's if he does follow through with his mission. I'm not 100% sure that's still the case. I still think that is the case, but I do think there were some rumblings that he may consider bypassing or not or delaying, or I don't know how it works, but that there was a chance that he would sign as a 2020 prospect. He does feel like the best shot still. They hosted the Pogorelk, James Pogorelk out of Virginia last weekend. I still think he's a Stanford type kid, Stanford lean right now. He'll be back for an official later. A couple other guys they're kind of keeping an eye on. I know our own Bryce Marich reported either today or yesterday, Ozzie Trapio, who is a Boston College legacy, who's committed to the Eagles, is a guy that Michigan has been kind of keeping in contact with. We have him as a top 100 or top 50. Our guys are really, really, really high on him. Don't know if anything would happen there, but worth noting that they're still, you'll kind of illustrate your point that they seem that they're really definitely going to take another guy on the outside. So, but Gentry still feels like their best bet in that regard, and which would be a nice pickup, whether he signs now or signs in the future. You know, he's a guy who's top 100, I think, both composite and by us. So, you know, he's a elite prospect. You know, with the whole mission thing, it is, you know, it's just not normal to be battling BYU and Virginia, you know, for a top 100 recruit, but that's kind of where things are at right now. And he is kind of the guy, though, I think Michigan might have the best shot with out of those guys right now.
And then at cornerback, Michigan's after Darian Green Warren, and then there was a second kid. I forget his name. Green Warren is one of the kids.
Did they just offered?
No, I think there was a four-star. His name, I think Henry Gray, was that his name? Or did?
He's off the board.
So Green Warren. Green Warren is one of these guys who, like, in any normal situation, he would have been committed to USC for approximately 3 years already. But because USC, they're keeping Clay Helton, they have the number 76 class in the country. It's six offensive linemen that Tim Drevno recruited and four other guys. They have 10 people committed this deep into the class. And obviously, that's giving people some pause. But people are still talking about him. Like, this guy is going to sign up to be the only, like, skill position player on the entire roster. So I just kind of feel skeptical that Michigan's going to get him. And then we're talking about, you know, kind of back-to-back years where Michigan is striking out on all of the real top-end corner prospects that they've been going at. And we've seen over the past, I don't know, half decade how it's really nice to have top-end corner prospects on your team. So I don't know. Sure. I don't know what your vibe is for cornerback recruiting.
I look at last cycle, and I really, really liked, you know, DJ Turner is a guy I would have considered as a top target for them, even though he was only like an 88 or 89. Jalen Perry, maybe a little bit different. Still a four-star guy, but not really, wasn't, I don't know if he was a tip-top type guy. I don't disagree that they've missed out on quite a few guys, and that I do agree that maybe should be a position of maybe a little bit more priority. With Green Warren, yeah, I mean, I got to go with history. You know, it's so this isn't. It's like David Long is the exception, not the rule in this type of situation. It's like I think you could almost build an All-American team of former SoCal defensive backs that it looked like Michigan might get that ended up staying home. You know, I mean, I remember even
they got Donovan Warren Juju. Though.
That's right.
Yeah, you know. Go to look at guys like Amon Marshall. You know, remember the Amon Marshalls Juju. Yeah. Even Juju gave Michigan some legitimate looks for a while, you know. And it just feels like, yeah, I agree. You know, it's amazing to think that SC has the 76th ranked class in the country. I don't care who the coach is. Like, that's insane that a school like of that caliber is struggling so bad. But yeah, you have a lame duck coach who's not a lame duck.
They said they're keeping him.
Yeah. He's
I can't fathom they keep him, though. I don't know what the delay is, but that being the ironic thing, though, is like kind of like what you said at the beginning. It just, if SC hires anybody of note, I just feel like he's the type of kid.
But so they got to like fire their coach.
Yeah.
They got to hire a new coach.
Yeah.
And they got to get all that done before the early signing period. Otherwise, they're going to be locked out. And then these 10 guys.
I mean, if they
it's going to be those guys and like MAC prospects.
If they get Urban Meyer,
they're not going to get Urban Meyer.
But like recruit for the next couple.
Urban Meyer's out, man. Urban Meyer has found his true calling, which is television, where he's awesome, and that's kind of depressing.
Yeah, people are mad that I actually put him up there today.
I didn't want to post it either, but it's like he's so good at this. It's really informative and interesting. I can see why he's a very successful coach. That and the complete amorality. Yeah. Anyway, Steve, you should probably talk now.
No. So I was going to say is Green Warren is supposed to enroll early as well. So it's not just I do not anticipate a delaying until February type situation for him. Unless he pulls a complete 180 on his plans, which again, it's recruiting. We know it could very well happen. But the other guy that I would kind of keep an eye on is, Michigan just offered a kid named Jordan Addison, who is committed to Pitt, who our guys just bumped him into the top 150 a few weeks ago. I think he's like a 5'11", 6-foot kind of kid. With Pitt, I know Barton Simmons, our director of scouting, loves Pitt's recruiting class for whatever that's worth. I don't know if that means they're going to hang on to all these kids or what.
Yeah.
I would think if you're committed to Pitt and a school like Michigan comes calling, you're at least going to, pick up the phone and hear what they have to say. So that's another one I would really kind of keep my eye on because, again, they've been very judicious in, not extending too many offers. So I would, if I'm following recruiting, I guess I would take note of any kind of offer they're making to a 2020 kid at this point at any position. So Green Warren, Addison, in my mind, probably the two real big names to kind of keep an eye on for now. And like I said, what we just talked about with SC, Michigan has stayed on Green Warren for months and months. So I think they're in a spot right now where I think they'd rather wait it out, see where that goes before they maybe dig too far down their board and get into the whole committable, uncommittable, do we take, offer a guy and he wants in now? Do we take him, that whole type of thing? I think they want to see where things go first. So,
and the other prospect who's out there who seems like Michigan will clearly take is Theo Johnson, the tight end out of Ontario. I know you're just going to say that it's a Penn State Michigan battle, so we can skip that part. Anybody else out there who's like a major prospect for Michigan? It seems like other than maybe a tight end, you want a quarterback, you want a tackle, you want a quarterback. There's not really much other activity.
No, I don't barring, a change of a roster change that we won't be made aware about for a while that will affect their approach. I don't see them taking another running back right now. I know there was a time in which I think you would have seen them take another guy at running back, a Toa Fili who's committed to Florida State type deal. I don't see that happening. I really don't see that happening, actually. I mean, they love Blake Corum. They still, despite Haskins and Charbonnet, both kind of emerging as guys now who have a lot of years of eligibility left, they still see Corum as the guy who can come in and play right away next year because he just brings a whole different dynamic.
And he's going to be here in January too, right?
So correct, be able to work him in. So,
yeah.
Absolutely. And so all of a sudden, it's interesting, is like Haskins' emergence, in my opinion, is really maybe what kind of caused Michigan to shut the door on a second guy, and now they can focus on 2021, where they can take a kid like Donovan Edwards out of West Bloomfield and say, hey, you're totally different back than Corum. We need another more feature. Not that Corum can't be a feature back, but you guys watch Corum's film. He's a guy who could hurt you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, he's
not necessarily your classic running back. So, Haskins' emergence has been just huge for Michigan in so many different ways, and including the recruiting trail. So, yeah, I think I posted on the board last week, probably the most boring stretch of recruiting that I've covered since I've been doing this, at least since, because June and July were so crazy and that everything kind of came to a standstill. And there has been, little to nothing, even on the 2021 front, where maybe you think maybe a couple guys would verbal. I mean, they've made some moves with some in-state guys, some other guys, but obviously nothing super tangible necessarily, and we'll see. Obviously, the outcome of next week's game could impact how things go for them momentum wise. You know, I was asked last week, you know, what happened to Michigan's recruiting if they beat Ohio State, and I had to sadly answer that I don't really know because they haven't beaten them since I've really been heavily recruiting.
I think that's the end of this segment, Steve. Thank you.
I want to hear about Michigan State recruiting.
I'll say this for Michigan State's class. It's ranked 32 spots higher than USC's.
credit to them. You know, the funny thing with State in their class right now, and there's usually a couple of them in every class, and I don't mean this like negatively toward any of the prospects or anything, but it's very heavily filled with guys that Michigan offered really early in the process and then kind of backed off on or didn't really heavily pursue. I mean, you see how many offers schools are sending out.
Yeah. This year's Michigan State class?
That offered really early in the process.
I don't recognize any of those names.
Really early in the process. Must like, been. You're not looking at 2023s right now.
I mean, they only have, like, three kids from Michigan, and the top-rated one is number 17 in the class.
What if D'Antonio can, like, sign an entire class that had offers from Michigan?
Like, they, I mean, like, well, I don't think they can survive.
If they had an offer, it's another if they were committable. And, like I said, like, that's why maybe, like, six or seven of the guys in their class right now were guys that had Michigan, like, a verbal offer but would not have been able to commit.
Yeah.
Right. And
but I don't know. I don't know how they're going to survive with zero top 15 prospects in Michigan and zero top 20 prospects in Ohio. I don't think that.
Yeah, their off the field situation has obviously really hurt them in Detroit, right? And so and that's just a fact. And so you know that's I think their highest ranked kid in state is like 17th or 18th.
17th.
And I don't think they're really a factor for anybody ranked any higher. You know,
in 2021
Michigan. In a great position to really kind of strengthen their hold. You know, you see what West Bloomfield's doing. They have a lot of good younger kids coming up. We know how Belleville is a little
touch and go.
Bipolar, I guess, would be the best. I don't know the best way to put it, but you know, it's very up and down with how things go at Belleville. But you know, and then Cass Tech, obviously, and King are always good for a good prospect or two every single year. Just feels like Michigan maybe back in that position where they kind of have their pick. Which, honestly, if you look back, they've kind of had mostly their pick. It's really just been Belleville's kind of been the spot where they haven't really gotten all of the guys they wanted. Pretty much since, like, say, the 17 class. So,
Oak Park has also been a little bit.
Yeah, I know that's true. That is, yep, you're right. That's the one other. And I don't know if that's going to change in 20. There's a couple kids in 2021. Feels like their interest in Michigan is pretty tepid. For whatever reason, but State not really the school that is capitalizing off of that at this point. So, for whatever reason.
All right, thank you. We'll probably talk to you in the near future around signing day. But thank you for calling in a little bit early.
Yeah, sounds good, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we're gonna take a break. Come back, and we have a special guest. It's Craig Ross.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities. And where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics. Within Alumni Online Communities, it's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch, and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, that's what your next ad should be. So here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization. Add $500 a month for each kid's 529. Invest with the appropriate risk tolerance. Make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.11, live from the Bow Store on Main Street.
It's 10. We're 5.10. We're like one behind the...
Look, man, I'm an engineer,
you're
so...
You're the one who started with zero.
So, yeah, I'm not really an engineer
anymore. We
changed
the hockey casting.
We should probably thank our sponsors. So.
We like them.
Our presenting sponsors are the Bow Store and Underground Printing. Our associate sponsors are Homeshare Lending, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Guard, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Perrin Brewing, and The Athletic. We welcome in Craig Ross right now because we had a... hour on WTK, and it felt like we needed another hour because we didn't even talk about any basketball.
Yeah, that's true.
So you should probably
move that down.
Yeah, move that down so people can hear you.
Okay. It's been an interesting year. I think even after only three games in an exhibition, I think Eli Brooks is proving close to proving he's a real player at least.
Yeah, and I remember we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago on WTK, and I got very frustrated with you because I thought you were crazy, and you're right.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to go so far to say I'm right, but I think he's close. And Torvik has him, if you believe his stuff, as the second best player so far that Michigan has had on the court in the three games they've played.
Well, that's his stat. Yeah. So, well, one interesting thing is, you know, we brought on Matt D from Endless Motor as a contributor.
Yeah,
and he's been going over the games and posting his thoughts in our Slack channel. And Brooks is grading out, at least in his opinion, as Michigan's best defender early in the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't quite agree with that. I would agree that he's a lot better than Jordan Poole, and that's important because he's probably not going to be as good an offensive player as Poole, but it may be sort of a break even there. But I still think Teske is Michigan's best defensive player. Teske and X.
Well,
although X has had a couple of shaky
and
moments.
And like Teske has had some issues of his own, especially when the tempo's gotten high.
Right.
So Michigan's not really a great defensive rebounding team right now.
They're a bad defensive rebounding team in three games.
I really did feel like the second half of that Creighton game was spooky curses that were happening to the team.
Yeah. From my point of view, the other good things are that the early on, I thought there was some little glimmer with David DeJulius, and then the last game, maybe there's more than a little glimmer, and I think perhaps we might have something here. In high school, I saw him play two complete games. One was against Clarkston, who was a state champion in his senior year, and his high school, I'm forgetting what it was, it's a smaller school in Detroit, beat Clarkston when he put up 24 in the fourth quarter and had 40-some in the game. And around Christmas time, his team went and played Chicago Orr, who had been one of the, maybe the state champion.
I've seen highlight games, both of these games.
And he put up about 46 in that game. And so his he was a scorer in high school, there's no doubt about it. And we're seeing a little bit of it. Also, I think saw a little progress from Johns, Castleton, Nunez, little bits.
Yeah.
And so I'm hopeful there. And then you've got Franz in the wings. So just on the eyeball test, it looks like, you know, Michigan there, they may have something going here this year. But then there's the big sort of question for me.
Which is what?
Well, one is, so far, the rebounding hasn't been good. Last year, we were a push on rebounds, which was unusual in a B-line team. Our percentage was 24.7. We gave up 24.8, so basically nothing. And this year, we're a little lower, but I don't think it's consequential. 24.2% we're getting on the offensive boards, but we're giving up 30%, which is terrible on the defensive boards.
All right, and that's, but we're 30% versus 24% is... It's how many rebounds over three games? Like three?
No, it's more. I had that number, but I don't have it now. But
it's not many.
It's like 9 or 10, and so it's consequential. But Michigan has been that way in the past. But the problem has always been that they pick it up on the turnover end, because the whole point of this is, how many shots do you get? You get an offensive rebound, you get an extra shot. If you get a turnover, you get an extra shot. And last year, we were one of the best teams in the country with very few turnovers, under 14%. We weren't great on the defensive side, but it was 18%. So we're like plus 4.1% when you look at those things. And this year, we're negative. I mean, we're turning the ball over 18.4%, which is not good.
Well, I mean,
and we're near the worst in the country at getting turnovers. So.
Yeah, but that's the style of defense they're currently playing.
It may be, but what that implies is you're getting a lot fewer shots, and they have had a lot fewer shots this year in a relatively about 6 shots fewer per game. Now that you pointed out correctly that they've picked up some free throws to sort of balance that out, but it doesn't come close to.
Well, and then the other thing is, like, what kind of shots is this defense giving up? So they're third best in the country at preventing threes, and they're like 11th in forcing long twos.
Correct, and that's the whole point. And
so, like, how many turnovers do you want to give up if you're getting long twos that opponents are canning at a 31% clip?
Well, I guess we'll see as the season plays out. But what's going on, of course, is Beeline hedged or hard hedged.
Yeah,
and Teske was awesome at that. And I mean,
last year Michigan was flat hedging. So there's so the hard hedge is the stuff that Jordan Morgan used to do, where he would come way out, and so. Yeah. Teske was kind of flat with
That's accurate. I think that's right. He wasn't coming way out.
Yeah.
But he was also, I mean, he was good at then picking up the ball handler, even if it was a small, quick guy. And he was also good at picking up on his backside if the ball handler tried to dump it. He was quite uncanny at it. Now they've got him they've got him sinking back into the lane. And how that's going to work, I don't know. I don't think that's the only thing Michigan will do this
year. Well, I mean, on WTK, I don't know if this actually made it to air, but Sam was talking to us about his Phil Martelli interview.
Yeah.
And Martelli, he asked him about the drop coverage, and he's like, that's what we're doing. But also, that's not the only screen defense that we have in our playbook. So, you know, against the Cassius Winston, you're not going to play drop coverage. It would be suicidal.
I would guess that's true. I mean, I think we may get some clue about it in the Iowa State game. Now, tonight we play Houston Baptist, who's not really a team.
Houston Baptist.
Who's Houston Baptist.
They're called...
And time to listen, even smaller than the guys we've been playing before.
Their nickname is the Huskies, which bothers me. It's almost as bad as, I think it's Albany. Albany's nickname is the Dolphins.
Okay.
Which is... There's no Dolphins in Albany. Unless they have an aquarium.
I mean, there's,
I don't think there's
a Sea World.
Are there wildcats everywhere? Because there's
there are wildcats everywhere.
Wildcat teams.
Yeah, I mean, you ever go outside, there's feral cats everywhere you go.
Yeah, there's wildcats.
Is that really what they mean by wildcats?
No, they mean a bobcat.
Yeah, but there are bobcats even in San Francisco area.
So they have a wide and dispersed range, mm-hmm. unlike dolphins.
We don't have wolverines in Michigan.
Which notably do not live inland.
You know, there was a wolverine in Michigan, remember, a couple of years ago, in the lower peninsula.
So there's historical reasons for the nickname. Yeah. So.
Sure.
But...
So anyway, you know, so
that was my basketball team.
Sled dog nickname team from Houston. You don't got any sled dogs in Houston. Come on.
Yeah. So Houston Baptist. I mean, I don't think we'll see anything different. They probably shoot it a little better from three than two anyway. So
they,
probably continue.
They race down the court and then they chuck it up.
Yeah, they're just a high tempo team that just falls apart in the half court. But I wanted to get back to David DeJulius.
Oh, okay.
Because you kind of talked about him briefly and then we got sidetracked.
Yeah.
So one of the things that was interesting this year is that kind of step back 3-point game that he had in spades in high school. Like it was Creighton. It was the first half of the Creighton game, and he knocks one down, and then the second one is halfway down and pops out.
Right.
And like, I don't want that to be like the thing that David DeJulius does all the time, but you know, especially on this team where you don't have a lot of secondary shot creation, like if he's able to hit those at a reasonable rate, that takes a lot of pressure off the rest of the team, especially in late clock scenarios. So. I just don't know if once you get into Big Ten play, that three-guard lineup might not be viable.
Against some teams, it will be because there's some three-guard teams.
It'll be viable against Northwestern and Nebraska.
Anything will be viable against them. But there are some Big Ten teams that are, as I look through their lineups, there are some Big Ten teams that are going small.
Yeah.
And some of them to really positive effect. I mean, I think... I don't know if either of you guys have seen Ohio State yet this year.
I have not.
Ohio State is the deal. I mean, they're as good as Michigan State, and they're playing three guards. And the problem there is they really play defense with three guards too. And Caleb Wesson has lost 40 pounds.
Yeah, that's a game changer.
That's
for them.
A game changer. And Kyle Young is a tough guy, and they're going with those two guys, and then they're rotating four guard types at the other three spots, including what's his name, DJ Carton,
yeah.
Who's great, and a guy named Walker who transferred from Florida State, who's tremendous.
Let's let the jury stay.
Let's see how he goes. But they also have Luther Muhammad.
Yeah, that's a very underrated player. They're a great defender too.
Yeah,
they do look.
And Dwayne Washington. So they've actually that's a team where you could play small.
We don't need to.
talk about that.
Oh, I said basketball.
Can we beat them in hockey? No. Not either.
Next year.
Volleyball.
Cavalry starts coming soccer. In next year for hockey.
So that's the theory.
It's not the theory. It's like you just look at the guys that they're recruiting. Now we're talking hockey recruiting. Yeah. You look at the guys that they're recruiting versus the guys they have on the team, and it's like 20-year-old, 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 Lake State transfer. And the guys they got coming in are like the top scoring guy in the U18s. It's a different world.
Yeah,
it's a little weird that these guys are like down the street and we can't like use them right now.
Well, I mean, there are rules against that. But in any case,
Ohio State. But I was pointing it out as to say Ohio State is a team where you could play three guards because that's what they do quite a bit.
Well, I think. We're all hoping that once Franz comes back, he's warranting at least 20 minutes, hopefully 30.
Well, and Franz does then provide a mismatch or potential mismatch for a lot of teams because he's a 6'8 guy who you could slide at the two or the three, theoretically.
It kind of feels like they're prepping him to play at the three, right?
Yeah. So I thought four because they're playing Nunez there right now.
No, they're playing Nunez at the three.
Three and Livers at the four.
Livers at the four.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of feels like. So Nunez continues to start because that's Franz's spot when he comes back, whenever that happens to be.
Yeah.
And then
he's only a very technical starter. He's playing like 30% of minutes right now.
Right, exactly. Well, his defense is not warranting it. You can see his flashes as a shooter. So he had a couple of shots where, that feels like Ryan Klein. That I get why
Right.
I get why Howard is giving this a shot, but at least right now he's definitely like early Duncan Robinson on the other end, and he's not providing nearly enough
defense. Yeah. That's for sure.
To offset that defense. So
yeah, defense is a problem. So in any event, other teams in the Big Ten that I've looked at are Purdue, who I've seen a couple times. They don't have any shooters.
I mean, it depends on how Wheeler comes through, but they have him. They have Stepanovich.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there is a deeply strange team. I mean, yeah. Anybody who's got, like, basically Jayshon Tate at point guard is going to be a weird team.
Yeah, it seems like, yeah, Easton, they list him as their three guy, but he really is.
I mean, he's a point.
He's really their point guard. I think that's right. And, you know, so that's a team that's, I mean.
That lost to Texas.
That lost to Texas.
Doesn't
Texas
look that at, good anymore.
At cause, home.
Because Texas just got clunked by. Who did they get clunked by?
Yeah. I mean,
and it was like the ultimate Texas move to like go beat Purdue and then get clunked by drumroll Georgetown.
Yeah,
basketball Maryland.
Yeah, Purdue also. I think didn't they? Did they lose on? I think they lost on the road to Marquette. So they've lost on the road to Marquette. They lost at home to Texas, and they really don't look like a great shooting team. They're under 60% from the line, so they're. Look like they may be a disaster as a free throw shooting team too. Yeah. So that's a little different deal for them, even though they're huge. I mean, they're really a big team, but
yeah, I mean that Texas game, Harms got a couple of fouls that I thought were pretty bad, like know. Just in terms of like they weren't fouls, and then he was stuck on the bench. I mean, one of the problems is it seems like two of their best players are Trevion Williams and Harms, and
they're the same guy or the same position.
And it's
least.
Like I don't know how you could possibly play them together.
I don't think you can.
So you've got.
You could.
I mean, yeah. I think a lot for Purdue just depends on Wheeler, who I liked as a freshman.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
But it's a big leap for him to go from kind of a bench player who sporadically contributes as a freshman to a guy who's a 20% usage guy. But they'll be in the tournament, right? Their defense is too good.
Their coach, I mean, that Painter is a terrific coach.
Yeah.
He's going to get the most out of what you've got.
Like I, after watching that Purdue Texas game, the next game on was Maryland, and I was like, wow, this is a different world. Just because, I mean, I'm not necessarily dumping on Turgeon, maybe a little bit.
Ira would.
He would.
Ira thinks Turgeon is.
He dumps on him so much that like I was, you know, too down on Turgeon.
But just you know, the intricacy of the sets that Purdue runs and how many shots they generate simply off their action versus Maryland, who's much more dependent on athleticism and isolation.
Yeah, but you don't come to Maryland to play like team ball. You're out there to kind of show off that you're. You're a one and done who spends 3 or 4 years in college.
And Maryland is not this year is not a big team, but they're very experienced. I mean, they run three guards essentially with Cowan, Wiggins, and Ayala.
Right, well, Wiggins and Ayala are like 6'5".
Yeah,
those guys
that's a different world than like Michigan trying to put all three of its guards.
6 footers out there, I understand, but they play Morsell a lot at the small forward. He's only 6'6". But I think Jalen Smith is better without Bruno Fernando.
Well, I mean, they have a similar issues with Purdue, where last year they had two guys who were centers.
Yeah, and they'd gotten each other's way.
Yeah. And, like, you know, Sticks tried to shoot threes, and he was, like, a 24% three-point shooter, and it was just, like, they're both good players, but there's a little bit of a Ewing theory for Maryland just because they're not playing 2-5s this year.
Yeah, and that's also, I looked at them once, they didn't shoot the ball great, and so far in the season they're, like, 29% from three. And
that's a little strange because they have guys who should be able to.
You would think, and they're under 65% from the free throw line, so they're not shooting the ball real well either. They look like they should be a really good team, but then you've got the factor.
It's the Maryland thing.
It's the Maryland thing, yeah. So that in the Big Ten, they look a little, I don't know, problematic to me.
Do you think that the teams that we've played so far maybe are better than...
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that because
Elon is like leading.
Elon had a game with UNC where they were down like 8 pretty late.
Yeah, they were down 8 with 2.
They were leading at the half.
Yeah, they were up 33-32 at half.
Yes.
And then they they were only down 8 with 3 minutes to go, and Sheffield, Marcus Sheffield, had a wide open three that he barely missed, and so it was close to going to 5, and then they couldn't do anything in the last couple of minutes.
So they're now, not like the 317
no,
team,
I don't,
which is what they are at KenPom right now.
I don't think so. Sheffield was a Stanford transfer.
Yeah, he played a third of their minutes last year and had a 106.0 rating. Yeah. So for that guy to transfer that far down is pretty unusual.
Yeah. I think I know why. I think their head coach at Elon was an assistant at Stanford and recruited Sheffield to Stanford. And he graduated in 3 years, and I think Sheffield and what's his name, Schrage or Schrage, something like that.
Oh, their coach? Yeah, I don't
know. At Elon. Yeah. And so, yeah, Appalachia State is...
Did Elon dunk on UNC?
Oh, I don't know.
We'll have to go to Torvik to find out.
Yeah.
Because that would make me feel so much better.
Yeah, and Appalachia State is in the 170s on KenPom, so they're 4-3. They beat Charlotte the other night.
That's a different level of competition than like the low majors.
Right. It's different than, say, Houston Baptist. And so... And so Appalachia State is not a complete stiff. And then Creighton is a top 40 or 50 team. I mean, they have a chance.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Creighton's season plays out because they were super small.
Yeah.
But they have a couple of guys who are coming back. They dunked. They dunked on UNC.
Marcus Sheffield, 1-1 on dunks.
Yes. Yes. We're not alone. UNC has been dunked on by Elon. We got to find out. We'll have
an Elon dunk watch.
Well, I mean...
Just like
functionally, yes.
Yes.
One of the weirdest running subplots of last year's basketball coverage, but there you go.
Yeah. So, Wisconsin, you know, I don't know what the deal there is. They're not real athletic. They've got Trice, Kobe King in the backcourt, which is okay. Brad Davidson. They're running three guards.
Yeah, they don't have a choice.
And then Aleem Ford and Reavers.
Just a shooter.
And Reavers. So
Reavers allows them to go back to their kind of old Wisconsin stuff, mm-hmm. where you know your centers are shooting three pointers and your guards are posting up.
Right.
King is pretty much the only guy who has the size to do that, but. Like, that's where they're going to have to get their offense from.
Yeah. So, they shoot it pretty well from the three, but they lost to St. Mary's, who's probably a pretty good team.
Yeah, that was overtime as well.
Overtime, yeah.
That was a weird game.
It was on a neutral court. They beat Marquette.
They clunked Marquette.
Yeah.
So,
what did Marcus Howard shoot in that game? Like, 40 shots?
It was 4.
21. 21. Yeah. That's why the Housers transferred. They're like, this guy takes too many shots.
Yeah.
And then Izzo's like, hey, man, this guy takes too many shots. Give us a waiver. And they're like, nah. And then Izzo resigns.
No. He asked them twice to, like, review it again. Like, he re-litigated
and,
it.
And then what was his reason?
I don't know. Like, they won't
never
say
heard
anything.
A reason.
Like, Izzo's irate, but they, like, won't.
I'm sure the Michigan State beat is all over it.
Yeah,
there was an article out today about how
in the news,
the Pied Piper of college basketball quit, and it's the NCAA's fault. I don't know.
Pied Piper.
There is no more sycophantic boot licking beat out there than Michigan State. Like, I can't. I don't know. I have some dignity, guys. Come on.
I don't want to get into it because I think it rolls into how things happened at Michigan State.
I mean, it does, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Anyway. Okay. Izzo's complaining. It must be.
Izzo's complaining. It's basketball season. Yeah. All right.
All right. We got to get to a break. But thanks for coming.
All right.
Good.
Thank you.
Good talking to you.
All
right.
Why do you do what you do? I grew up in the small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed great people I care about making a lot of poor financial decisions. I thought to myself, I never want to be in that position, putting my retirement at risk. Now we want to make sure that your retirement is not at risk, and by providing education and guidance, we inspire our clients to make great decisions, putting them on a path to be able to retire with confidence. I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP, President and Founder at
Peak Wealth Management.
And that's my why.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Say, do you like clickbait? Do you like articles that take about 5 minutes and zero knowledge to write? Well, you listen to this podcast, and you probably read MGO Blog, which means you don't, and it's probably time to get that Athletic subscription. I'm going to get you 40% off. Just listen in. The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site delivering in-depth sports coverage for diehard fans. You read exclusive stories on Michigan football by Nick Baumgartner and Austin Meek, Michigan basketball by Brendan Quinn, national stories from writers you know like Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel, and Seth Davis. There's no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news coverage. You can join today with Wolverines content you won't find anywhere else and get 40% off your annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/mgoblog. Again, that's athletic.com/mgoblog.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Before we all depart to brave our eager solitude, raise a glass with dues for love and may lie.
For all our... Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.10 live from the Bow Store on Main Street.
Here we are.
We have dispensed with our guests, so now it's time to talk about the football that has recently happened and will happen in the near future.
The football that happened was pretty good football.
It was. Like the offense came out with like a plus 17 in rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, I was noticing that when I was going over the video to see like what I could do for neck sharpening. I was like, first I was going to do like, okay.
This and then you did something that Michigan State did right.
Well, yeah, so, but like Michigan adjusted to it too. Like they got, sure. They got us three times with it. Congratulations, yeah. State. But like. It was too much. My first, like, the article I was starting to write was like, okay, Michigan just completely dominated, especially the Gattis offense, was just toying with them. Was like, yeah. Picking the exact problems that Michigan State had in their defense. And finally, I was like, I just got to leave this for Brian and UFR because there's no way I can cover all of this in the course of one article.
Yeah, so let's try to sum up. So, Michigan got...
That's the summary.
To the edge. There were 14 plays that I think were just... either pure edge plays or close enough, like an arc keeper where you keep mm-hmm. it. And on those plays, Michigan got 175 yards. And in addition to that, they had four RPOs, three of which were complete and blindingly wide open for another 44 yards. So over 200 yards in this game were from plays where the offensive line didn't have to block Raekwon Williams, didn't have to block Kenny Willekes. And all you needed to do is get down some not very good Michigan State defensive backs.
Right.
Or threaten to run the ball.
Right.
See the linebacker guys cross the line of scrimmage
and
almost.
And the safeties are back. No, yeah. Normally, Michigan State used to just stifle that.
Not anymore.
Yeah, because they can't keep their safeties that close up.
So, I mean, just, you know, I've been doing Michigan State UFRs forever. And two things in this game, I don't know if they ran their AA blitz more than a couple times.
Right.
Like, I saw it once, and I noted it once. And sometimes, it like, I won't notice a particular thing because I'm trying to get through a whole freaking game.
It's pretty obvious when they do it, though, because they, you know, the tackles spread out to the B gaps, and then all of a sudden.
I mean, there was one kind of similar blitz where they sent three guys up the middle in the red zone. Mm-hmm. But other than those two instances, I don't think they even bothered to run it because it's been so thoroughly dominated for the 5 years that Harbaugh's been here.
I mean, it's gotten to the point after 12 years that the Michigan bloggers are like, here's Michigan State's favorite play. Here's how you beat it.
Right.
Right? Like,
and then their safeties.
Yeah. Like,
at no point did they line two guys up at 8 yards, which was the whole like innovation that their quarters defense brought to the table. Instead, you know that 2 yard RPO to Ronnie Bell?
Yeah.
Where he breaks a tackle by stiff arming a guy and gets down to the two. That guy lined up at 13 yards deep pre-snap, and when Ronnie Bell caught the ball, he was 5 yards away from Ronnie Bell.
Because that guy is Trey Person. And like,
no, that was a safety, I think.
Yeah, it was Person playing safety. Okay. But it was like, that's the thing. They have they thought Xavier Henderson was going to be their like savior. He was going to be like their next great. And they love to focus on that guy in spring. And then they had like another Josiah Scott was going to be the next great cornerback. And
well, Scott played two plays in this game, so.
Right. So he goes out and they're down to the other guys. And like, once you're down to the guy literally named Person, they're just playing guys.
They're just guys.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's strange because like, if I was Michigan State, like, fine. Like, we're going to get beat for some touchdowns. It's fine. But I'm still playing these guys at 8 yards because that's our DNA.
Right.
And they just completely abandoned it.
Well, and you have to change. You have to adapt, Brian.
I mean, you have to adapt, but like,
you have to be. But that's the thing.
Everyone, but like, they throw an RPO to Collins, and it looks like it's 2015 out there when this like stuff just started being something that people were running, and nobody knew what to do about it.
So the way State and most quarters teams will play it is they'll have the safeties lined up.
State's not a quarters team anymore.
But they'll come down a couple yards at the snap, and they weren't doing it. They're just staying back.
No, I mean, they're not a quarters team anymore.
They're just a cover four team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, if State isn't a quarters team, and this is, it's over. It's the trademark Michigan State thing, they're not even trying to keep doing. So, let's keep doing it
even when it's over is the trademark Michigan State thing.
Let's focus more on the Michigan side of things. So, Ronnie Bell had an outstanding game, a UFR record plus 11.5 on the run chart. And some of that is like, you know.
Has a running back gotten that in like the last few years?
I don't know.
Higdon ever hit plus 11?
I think Higdon did maybe one or two
like
games.
Like an Indiana game or something?
Yeah.
When he busted out.
Well, it was a strange game because like usually the wide receiver blocking chart is like a total of like plus four, minus two or something. And in this game, they had, I think, almost double the graded events as the quarterbacks and running backs.
Which is hashtag speed and space.
It is.
Yeah.
So they ran bubble screens. They got a couple of end-around/jet screens to Jackson. A couple of their RPOs were specifically testing the edges of the Michigan State defense. And, you know, the thing that jumped out is that Michigan's wide receiver blocking was outstanding in this game. I don't necessarily think they missed more than one, two blocks the whole game, and they were successfully cutting the Michigan State backs by like hurling their midsections into their waists, and they would just go down, and they'd be like, ow, and then they were done. And Bell was the foremost proprietor of this particular blocking technique. Now, the last one got flagged.
Yeah.
And I've looked at this, and it like, I don't know what the flag was.
There's like so many subsections to that.
Yeah,
rule
but
that like I don't.
So you got to hit between 10 and 2. I don't think the 5 yards downfield rule is an actual thing because I saw some blocks that were more than 5 yards downfield.
It is a rule. It's one of those rules that like is never followed.
Yeah,
and like when it gets called, the coach goes ballistic.
But yeah, but like it wasn't a guy coming from the out. I mean, there was a guy in the UFR who listed all the various rules and is like, yeah, this kind of just seems like a bad call. Also, where it came from. It didn't come from the judge, the side judge, is that the guy in the line of scrimmage? I don't know.
I don't know the right.
But it came from much further downfield, and I was like, all right. But in any case, this blocking technique was undefeated. And then Bell on the speed option, and the Michigan catches a blitz off the slot. Mm-hmm. Bell sees the blitz off the slot, and he's like, all right, that guy's gone. Never turn upfield. And then he redirects, gets to a safety, and hurls him into the sideline.
Yes.
And that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yep.
So, you know, Bell had hiccup against Penn State, but he's consistently able to generate yards after the catch. I mean, that bubble screen against Penn State where he's dead to rights and he turns it into 37 yards. He had a couple of broken tackles in this game. He was able to stiff arm that safety. So that's a pretty good aspect. His body control is good. So the slot fade where the defensive back fell down, still a tough catch.
Yeah, because he's like off balance and the ball's outside because
Patterson doesn't know the guy's going to fall down, right? So he's got to...
Right, he's expecting to give him like a chance to get to the ball, but he's supposed to have to like go and get that one, go up for it.
But he's able to catch that, not break stride, and rip off 42 yards. And so now you're kind of looking at a guy who kind of feels like the total package. Like he's not as big as Nico Collins, but one of the things that we heard all offseason was that like it was him and Nico Collins like were the guys who can go up and get it. As an ex-basketball player, you kind of feel like, all right, that has some plausibility
but
to it.
But also as an ex-basketball player, he's a true sophomore who is probably closer to a freshman in like the amount of routes that he's learned.
And, like, No. Because like he put up 1,300 yards as a senior in high school, right? Like that's the whole reason he got recruited.
Yeah, yeah. So but like he's also like, did you ever watch his high school tape? It was all bombs.
But yeah, bombs on which he was skying for the ball.
Okay,
but that's you could say that about any high school wide receiver. Like the offense that Peoples Jones ran in high school was rudimentary.
Well, actually, they were like running screens to him all the time. Yeah. He was doing what he did at Michigan State too, like just dodging people at 6'3".
But so. Presumably, Michigan is going to have to replace a couple guys at outside receiver. I feel pretty confident that they can stick in Ronnie Bell out there and then have their two freshman slots become sophomore slots and not really lose as much as you might think.
Right.
So the development of Ronnie Bell from like a two-star recruit who people poop on, not our site. I was very positive about Ronnie Bell. But, you know. As a one wide receiver class, I was a little nervous about that.
Well, yes, I'm amazed that is still like a thing that people like, especially with a two star recruit. That like, there's got to be something that they saw there. It wasn't like Michigan just panicking and this is the only two star we could get.
But you know, other offensive things that stood out to me, Michigan did not run a pin and pull, zero. And how much practice time did Michigan State put in on pin and pull the last couple weeks?
The last couple weeks? I mean, they've been doing it since spring, probably.
Probably a lot, right?
Yeah. Like, they practice that, and they practice the arc. They practice the arc read so much, they've been running the arc read.
They didn't defend the arc read.
Like, no, but they weren't expecting Patterson to keep.
I mean, there were...
Every one of them was a keep. Every one of them was a keep read.
Yeah, there was one that was borderline. But there was.
I remember that one thinking it was a keep read because he handed it off, and I was like, maybe we're kicking their butts. Maybe
borderline. But okay. And then there was one where it was unbalanced formation. They move the jet guy across. He moves out into space. Eubanks moves out into space. There's nobody for either of them until like the cornerback at 10 yards, and I'm like, you just know that like Rich Rod. Like video where he's just ranting in the press box after one of his guys screwed up.
Right.
I kind of feel like that was like Gattis's internal monologue. Things are going very, very well, but like he clearly had something dialed up to like get that to work. And just didn't make the pull.
Every single time they still have not used that jet guy in the arc read game. They've used him in other ways now.
They've used him as a blocker a couple of times, or at least they wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean.
But have we seen the triple option pitch that we were like all sure was coming?
No, we did get a speed option in this game, which was a nice call.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
He pitched it right away. It was almost
because they caught the blitz that I mentioned that Bell passed up, so it was a pretty easy decision for him. So that was a nice situation. Patterson did not grade out like his stats suggested he should, and people are just mad at me about that.
He wasn't that accurate in this game.
Yeah, so you have, I don't know. There is this undercurrent of discontent that I am somehow grading Shea Patterson differently than I grade Michigan's other quarterbacks because I've made up my mind about him. And that's not the case because, you know, the Sainristil catch where he takes him off his feet and he has a million yards in front of him.
Right.
Like, there was a comment in the UFR where it's like, well, that's on Sainristil because he should be running closer to the quarterback. And I'm like...
No, you put the ball in the space, and the receiver goes and gets the ball.
Well, even if that's true, we're talking about a high-end Division I quarterback who's moving out, running to the same side his arms on.
Right.
And
well, he also kind of jumped through that one.
And he's got to make a 15-yard pass.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter what the wide receiver should be doing. I'm going to grade that the way I grade everybody else, and that's a marginal throw because it takes your guy off your feet.
Right.
And like the thing that people I think maybe don't understand is that sometimes there's not a lot of leeway in the way I grade. Mm-hmm. Like it's just the result of the play. Right. And if you took a wide receiver off your feet but it was still a catchable ball, that's marginal. And there's a little bit of wiggle depending on like how your degree of difficulty.
Like, I mean, you don't have to defend this call because, like, I remember the play in the stadium. I remember Shea, like, feeling the steps before they got there and kind of falling backwards and throwing it instead of just, like, throwing it. And, you know, Sammer still did a good job to adjust and fall down and catch the ball and focus on catching the ball, which has been a thing for him.
Yeah, I mean, and Patterson.
And that was fine, but like Patterson did not put it where Sandristel had any chance to go and move the ball afterwards.
And Patterson did have a number of high quality throws, and I probably should just start weighting the downfield success rate because he had a couple of pluses for dealing with pressure well. He had three DOs. He didn't have a starred event. Mm-hmm. So even though it was like a 66% on the success rate, you know, the performance is better than that because
bad reads are very few
and
far between.
There's one, and that I thought that was, you know, the Collins decision on 4th and 3, where, you know, it's a 5-yard hitch, it's 4th and 3. You know that the opposite cornerback is going to be like, this is going to be a hitch at the
right
sticks.
Where we were sitting, like that was in our basically close to our corner, right in front of the state band, and like you saw that he was getting interfered with, and I almost think that Patterson was like, oh, free yards.
No, because that wasn't.
Well, first of all, throwing it in the direction of Nico Collins.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain too much, but it just kind of feels like.
But I thought he like looked at it, saw that.
You know the kind of Ole Miss like, okay. stuff where it's like, all right, we're going to simplify this. He's going to get one man reads on the backside of a trips or a quads formation because we don't trust him to read the rest of the stuff out. And it kind of felt like that because on the other side, you do have a route concept that gets a guy wide open to convert, and he's not even looking at the 4 wide receivers. He's committing himself to throwing
a hitch. And we know from inside and out that that's part of the offense, that they've been trying to simplify his reads this year.
Yeah, so that I didn't like. But, you know, one event in 37 dropbacks or whatever. And he performed well enough that Michigan put up 44 points against the number 11 S&P Plus defense.
In a pretty cold environment, and
so
you believe in the gloves thing. This is the conspiracy out there because the gloves in Maryland and the gloves at Michigan State.
Maybe
the only time he's ever really been a little bit inaccurate.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I just call it as I see it. And Patterson had a good game, but he also kind of kept Michigan State a little bit more in it early. And you know, that's all right. You know, it's a B+ performance, I guess I would say. And people are mad at me because I'm not like, this is the best quarterbacking I've ever seen.
Whatever. I don't care. People who don't know what they're like are just making hot takes. I don't care what they say.
And say, I didn't play the game, so I can't see it.
Okay.
All right, that's stupid.
I mean, it was... I think that like people want to make sure that Patterson gets some credit for having a good game, just like people want to make sure that Gattis gets some credit for like calling a good game.
And this is a big boy blog. We don't hand out free compliments.
Right. Go. But just the other thing about
Patterson. Go back to your TikTok.
He's been getting better as games go along. And, like, when he doesn't have a lot of chances to throw, he maybe comes in a little bit low. But, like, he does take time to warm up. And that was something we noticed last year, too, that he's just kind of a quarterback that needs to, like, you know, his 20th throw is going to be a lot more in rhythm than his 5th throw.
Defensively, I don't have that much to say because...
I was very livid in the stadium, and my wife was like, calm down.
Why were you livid?
about the Dex Hill penalty. Passenger.
Oh, that was pretty bad.
That was the other thing that happened right in front of
me. That one was crazy because the...
the receiver's going the other way.
The receiver's trying to get away from the ball.
Because the receiver sees that that's where the coverage is, and he's like, maybe I can drop.
No.
I'm not catching this, so maybe I can, like, drop.
I don't buy the,
like grabbing him and, like...
I don't grab the 4D chess thing. I just think he's bad at football. But, yeah, you know, Hill wins over the top, and we talk about this all the time. Like, you should have a right to your momentum. And, like, when a guy's trying to cut through you to not the ball, and you put on a flag, I'm like, oh, come on. But other than that, I mean, we have the kind of early drives we talked about, you know, Michigan having a certain weakness against bunch formations that Michigan State scouted and got some profitability off.
Yeah, it was Michigan's doubles coverage, where they're picking two guys to double team, and State was like, okay, we're going to just throw it underneath that.
So they score a touchdown. And then the only other thing that I think can be counted as a negative is there were a couple of Metellus instances where he just loses the plot. So on the first third down that they had where Dana gets a sack, he completely blows a coverage on their tight end, and he's wide open for a touchdown, like 40 yards downfield.
Yeah.
And then that happened again, and this time Lewerke actually threw it. So Ambry Thomas has outside leverage, and then
there's nobody inside.
And there's nobody inside, and I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah,
and there was a shorter route that he came up on, which turned into a double move, and then that guy was open. So two instances where you have Michigan State receivers running open deep. Now, we haven't seen this from Metellus basically ever. Like, he's been one of the most consistently good, boring safeties.
Oh, and I had a theory on that, too, because I was doing that whole doubles coverage thing, and this was getting too even the weeds for neck sharpies, but now it's coming up. The way Michigan State was screwing.
I mean, he's just blowing the coverage is what's happening.
Well, yeah, he's blowing the coverage, but I think he was blowing it on purpose because he thought they were screwing with him the same way before.
No, no way.
And so he's, like, sitting in there to, like, break down on those underneath things.
Nobody intentionally lets a guy free downfield.
No, not intentionally, but I think he felt that that guy was covered by Ambry Thomas and what, Brian Lewerke, he's going to get the ball there?
Another game where Michigan's defensive ends come out with, like, a total of one minus in my grade A, which is... Right. It's like, so Quiddy Pay isn't...
Well, I gave the quietest star I've ever given someone in an FFF chart. Which is
every time I grade him out, he's like plus eight, minus zero, and I'm like, jeez.
I know, but usually we have like a lead up, like, okay, this guy's on star watch this game.
Well, it's just
he goes up against Michigan State, who are the worst tackles we're going to face, like worse than Rutgers.
He's exactly the same as Aiden Hutchinson, and he has a star, and he deserves a star.
He does. I feel like we probably should have done it a couple of weeks ago.
Probably.
Yeah.
But one of the things about this game is that it really emphasized the fact that the defensive ends are able to make up for some of the weaknesses at defensive tackle.
Yes.
So, you know, Hutchinson's able to jump a cut block and cut off a ton of space and get in kind of a flying squirrel tackle. And, you know, Pay and Hutchinson are really good at spilling stuff. So that's been...
It was not Michigan's strategy in, like, 2016.
No, I mean, but given the way their defense looks right now, it's just the thing that makes sense to do. And, you know, we got to put in Mike Dana as well, because Mike Dana is also Quiddy Pay and also Aiden Hutchinson.
He's also plus seven, minus zero at the end of the game, and he went to like 10 fewer snaps.
Well, and he does the same thing. Like, he's not going to get around the edge. He's going to forklift you back to the quarterback. He's going to be really good as a run defender. And it's really strange that they already had two of these guys. And Central Michigan's like, hey, do you want another one? And Michigan's like, sure.
And we'll give you our receiver coach. Keep him away from sharks.
And the only bad part is, like, Dana's not going to be here next year. And I can't get that in my head because I'm like, oh, here's a new...
Michigan never gets transferred.
Yeah.
Every other school is used to dealing with transfers. And like, oh, that guy was a JUCO. He's gone next year.
Yeah.
So, like, we're like, oh, we had Austin Panter for our entire, like, young adulthood.
Yeah, wow. I wasn't expecting to talk about Austin Panter.
Well, now we've checked the box.
Khalik Hudson had another instance where he demonstrated that it's really hard to run on him on the edge.
Yep.
Where he gets into one defender, sheds him, takes on a second, and lets the other guys clean up. He also blocked a punt, which was pretty good.
Oh, I'm going to miss that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Michigan can maintain. They've had some punt blocks from guys not named Hudson, so yeah, I think they got a good shot.
His skill, because, I mean, the punt block is such a, you know, you have to be able to get around a guy and get in really fast. So it takes that crazy experience.
Harbaugh was asked about it in the press conference, and he was like, they didn't track who blocked punts before 1990.
Yep.
So in the record book, Khalik Hudson is like the all-time best Michigan punt block guy, which goes back to 1990.
Well, I mean, Sapp and I have been doing those teams things.
No.
And trying to, and talking about, like, because teams used to, teams have punted 40 times in a game in the past. So there are dudes. Like the 1950 guy who like won the 1950 snowball.
Okay, but
that's like a different
sport when it comes to blocking punts, right? You're punting on first
down. But that's probably why they weren't tracking it like that. Yeah. Anyway, I would say the greatest of all time in Michigan history, because Michigan history goes back into the weird days.
I think adjusted for level of
Marquise
competition.
Walker, who is like well remembered.
No, he's better than Marquise, and I say that with all the respect for Marquise. Marquise had like four blocks in one season, and so, Hudson's done more than that over the course of his career.
I also think Michigan State's punt was like asking for it. Like they were so close all year.
Well, that was the lovely sequence where Michigan gets Michigan State to jump on their move call.
Move!
Which unfortunately was not audible in the game this time, like it was. What were they
Army.
Army.
It was Army. But they're both in like such key situations. Army is like on the goal line.
Well, Michigan
Army
State
is...
one wasn't that key.
But it was like they're going to go for it on fourth and one.
Yeah, and so then you get that, and you get the blocked punt, and then immediately afterwards you get the Nico Collins touchdown.
Yeah.
And also we had our traditional Nico Collins runs a fade, and Michigan gets an end zone pass. They should just do that the instant they get to the 17-yard line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just like run the PI, run the 4 PI that you call in the playbook.
Yeah. It's, the LPI offense. All right, we'll take a break, come back, and it's time to talk about the Indiana Hoosiers.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGo Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas, and let Human Element show you the way.
Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com. Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.10, live from the Bow Store on Main Street.
That is the music of the Lucky So-and-Sos, a Washington, D.C.-based jazz-slash-funk-slash-hip-hop band. Guitar player and reader Ian Taranji, who's LSA Class 94, wrote the first one we played, Coast East Soul, and plays in all of them. He's also a famous immigration lawyer and host of a radio show on local D.C. politics.
Did you? Oh, that's good.
Yes, I figured you'd like him.
Yeah, talk to me about housing policy. But first, we'll talk about the Indiana Hoosiers. This might be the best Indiana team since, God, I don't know.
Cam Cameron?
Before that, I think. I mean, they're 20th in SP Plus this year.
Yeah.
They are looking to get win number 8 against Michigan. Even if they don't get that, there's a pretty good shot that they're going to beat the corpse of Purdue.
And then they got a bowl game to get to nine-win Indiana.
Well, I mean,
it's the big home game. Like, we're going to get Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trap game, but also, I don't think anybody doesn't respect this edition of Indiana. They've played Penn State tough. I guess they lost to Michigan State. Never mind.
there is one person who doesn't respect this version of Indiana, and that's me.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah, well, no. I think Indiana's good.
Okay.
I think Michigan's a terrible matchup for them in both phases.
All right, well, let's talk about their offense first. They've lost Michael Penix, so Peyton Ramsey's back, kind of a noodle-armed, spread quarterback guy. Mm-hmm. Wop Fillier is in concussion protocol, may or may not play after probably the most egregious missed targeting call of the season.
That one was ridiculous, because he fumbles because he's knocked out, and Penn State gets the ball.
Well, and so two guys hit him, and I think you can argue that the second guy had his face mask up enough that it didn't count, but
after the first guy knocked him out?
Yeah, the first guy puts the crown of his helmet into his... And I'm just...
Yeah.
It was baffling.
Yep. So I expect him to be out. I think that they might be like... This is our leading receiver. He's almost at 900 yards already, so...
And he's the third leading receiver in the Big Ten behind two guys from Minnesota. A little bit of a weird year. And then Michigan... Indiana has a couple of... Britton Covey Memorial 8th-year seniors.
Right.
And Nick Westbrook and Donovan Hale, who are still in college.
Yeah.
They both had catches against Michigan in 2015.
Yeah, and like Nick Westbrook, everyone remembers him from like that moon ball catch, which is like the only offense they had in the snow globe game.
Yeah.
Which is, what, 2016?
So those guys are pretty much the same as Ty Freifogel. They're all... loping downfield, leaping receivers.
Yeah, Freifogel has passed Donovan Hale, I think.
Yeah, and
Westbrook probably.
Yeah, Freifogel hasn't seen his athleticism drop off because they can't stay healthy.
Right.
So he's their number two receiver. Wop is their number one receiver. They had a freshman backup fill in for him against Penn State. He had still had 7 catches and 85 yards, so he might not be Wop, but they. Can plug and play a little bit.
David Ellis, he was committed to Central Michigan over Michigan State. And then Indiana came along, and then Michigan State was like, so, if you're going to Indiana, do you want to check out? He's like, nah, I'm good.
And then C.V. Scott returns as their running back. Just think Devion Smith.
Uh-huh. Big boy. He's listed as 6'2", 231.
Yeah.
One of the running themes that was going through this film was like, none of these weights are at all true.
Well, so Scott is not a home run hitter. If you let him get to the second level, he's going to grind out 4 or 5 yards after the after contact. Not the most agile guy, but can run through arm tackles. You know, a decent, solid back, but they're, I think, close to dead last in the league in terms of 10-yard runs.
Yeah.
Michigan is tops in the country at preventing 10-yard runs.
I mean, he's going to be...
for our defensive tackles, he's going to be a little bit of a hassle again. Because, like, remember what Javon Leak did to us for Maryland? Like,
no.
Hits, if they hit at 2 yards deep, it's going to be a 4-yard run.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The annoying 12-play Maryland drives.
Yeah.
So the problem with that is that Maryland had a pretty good interior offensive line.
And Indiana does not.
Indiana does not.
No, I brought out your old... what was it called? When you from scouting Shea Patterson when he was at Ole Miss, you had a acronym
virtually unblocked guy up the gut. Yeah,
VUGUG.
VUGUG, yeah.
Yeah, so I looked up your old UFR for that and brought that into my charting because I was like, I need a word for this now.
So it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to execute the same kind of thing they did that Maryland did, and then the other issues Michigan has had with Indiana is that they run zone stretch against Mo Hurst and Mike Dwumfor, and Michigan has been pretty decent about handling stretch this year.
That was a dangerous thing to run against a team that didn't have defensive tackles that were going to stay in when you are playing to squeeze. But if you're playing to spill all the time, then okay. You know, get those guys out there because you have edge protection up the wazoo.
And it kind of feels like this is a game where Michigan is going to be in the 3-3-5 a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Where's Michigan's defense problem? It's been the defensive tackles, and they don't have the interior line to deal with that.
And then their offense is just super dank. Right? Like,
yeah, well, they're going five wide all the time. They're like even putting the running back in out, and like, you know, a third of the time they're going to be out in a five wide spread and just be like, okay, you can't.
And it is a pretty hilarious coordinator thing that their depth of target is basically the same as it was last year. Their quarterback is mostly the same. Their wide receivers are mostly the same.
They get rid of DeBoer, and they bring in DeBoer.
Right, and so
they don't even change.
They didn't change anything except the coordinator, and even the names are pretty similar. And they've added 2 yards per attempt.
Yeah,
which is absolutely massive, and it's kind of like, well, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, Kalen DeBoer has actually been a pretty good offensive coordinator wherever he's gone. He was the guy who, like, remember when Eastern Michigan was scoring all of a sudden?
No.
Well, okay. If you were an Eastern Michigan fan, and all of a sudden they were good a couple of years ago at scoring, that was the offensive coordinator at the time. And then he was at Fresno State. You remember them being up there.
Yeah. So they run a ton of screens. They can't pass protect, but they only have 15 sacks allowed on the season.
Because they don't have to pass protect that long. You're going to dink it.
Right. But so if Michigan is able to kind of like suffocate the dink game and put them in an actual passing down,
which
that's
is what Michigan's specialty is. And you know, they run this 3-3-5 all the time.
Yeah.
They use this double system, which is going to take away your first and second reads. And these guys aren't going to last that long out there. It's just we're a bad matchup for them.
I mean, I kind of feel like, I don't know.
And like our corners, like LaVert Hill and Ambry Thomas are like leagues better than like, and these guys got shut down by Michigan State.
So, but what I'm more concerned about is like, okay, you go empty and the two guys on the outside, whatever.
Right.
But like if WAP's in the game, if they're playing two slots at the same time, the dink is just hard to combat. Right? Because, like, you can get 5 yards on your dink.
Peyton Hendershot because he just runs dudes over.
Yeah.
Again, Michigan is faster at that. Like, you're going to get McGrone to these plays a lot quicker. Like, a lot of the time they dink it out there, and then, like, he's got a couple seconds to try to dodge the safety. Well, you have 1 second to dodge the safety before Cam McGrone is going to show up.
I mean, they put up, what, 28 on Penn State? Fairly similar defense.
Breakdowns. Penn State, remember, like, Penn State, every once in a while, they've got those small corners, and, like, then they just break down. So they were lobbing it over the corners, and our corners are not Penn State's corners.
Lobbable.
And, you know, Metellus' issues against Michigan State notwithstanding, normally our safeties don't bust.
Correct.
And that was where they got, they was very, very chunky. They had, like, 5 plays over 30 yards, and everything else was, like, 4 yards or less.
And Michigan has been superb at preventing long plays when teams do get drives, it's like 12 plays, and they're still on the 30. And I kind of feel like that, like, Indiana's going to be able to pull off a couple of those. They're going to have long drives that go get scores, but they're more likely to be field goals just because.
Yeah, you can press the field a little bit.
Right.
I mean, the thing that they were doing with Penix was they were getting people to get. People were afraid of the fades. They were putting their corners off.
Yeah.
And then you can just dink all day long underneath the Fry Fogle and Hale and Westbrook, and Like, they were getting 10-yard chunks that way. Michigan, the way they play, is not really conducive to doing that.
Yeah. All right, other side of the ball. The Hoosiers' defense has settled in under Tom Allen into the they're not bad.
And they're well-coached. They're not talented.
No, I mean, but they've managed to, like, unearth a cornerback every year.
Yeah, and this one's a true freshman, so he's going to be annoying for a while.
Yeah, well, personally annoying because I'm like, all right, we couldn't have got that guy last year.
I mean, nobody knew who this guy was. Tian Mullen, I don't think he was like a...
His name is, it looks like Taiwan, except the A and the I are reversed, and I wonder if that's pronounced or not. I don't know. Anyway.
That wasn't the name I was worried about pronouncing.
It was so Mullen is a dude, and Mullen is a dude not like for a freshman. Mullen is grading out with like an 86 at Pro Football Focus. I think he's top five nationally in passer rating when targeted amongst freshmen, and a lot of the guys who aren't Mullen have like 7 tackles and 2 passes defense because they're not starters.
Right.
And Mullen has been a starter from day one. He's pretty good. The bad news for Indiana is that Michigan has more than one receiver.
Right. And like, so what they do with Mullen is they'll leave him on an island a lot of times and play their like cover two, their man two.
They're
kind of a quarters team, but it's not always quarters. They
cover six.
Yeah, well, so what they'll do is they have a lot of blitzes.
Quarter, half.
So they'll give you a quarter's look off the snap, and then all of a sudden that turns into a cover one real quick with a fifth man coming.
And that like, I agree with you that I think any team that blitzes a ton, highly dependent on blitzes for their pressure, is a bad matchup for Michigan. Because I don't know if I've seen a Michigan team that's a better blitz pickup team. Like, they're out of this world.
Cesar Ruiz is number one. That guy that you found who like is a Michigan fan working for PFF.
Yeah, their intern who's a Michigan guy who just like searches their database for Michigan facts. Jared Evans.
Long may he
intern at Pro Football Focus.
So he found that Cesar Ruiz is the number one center at Pass Pro this year.
Well, and it's not just the individual matchups. It's the fact that interior trio.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a ton of experience. They're all smart. They all get off blocks. And they all pick up, like, how much interior pressure has Michigan suffered this season? I'm grading this out, and when Michigan does get pass pro minuses, it's almost always a tackle getting beat one-on-one on the edge.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen that often, even, but like, you know, I don't think they've dipped below 80% in the last 5 or 6 games. And they went up against Michigan State, they went up against Penn State, like, they went up against some teams that have some like dudes, some pass rush dudes, and like, I know you liked. What was their
James Head,
their strong side end, who's like 260.
Quiddy-like.
And I think that...
Dana-like. I think I compared him to Dana.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can see Mayfield getting beat in the particular Mayfield way where he's still attached and he's pushing, but the quarterback has to move a couple times. But this feels like a defense that's going to try to blitz because they get nothing from the defensive tackles. Mm-hmm. And Patterson's going to have time anyway, and then he's going to be able to sit and survey and find guys. And then the only thing that you're a little bit worried about is like, all right, he hasn't been as accurate as he has been for the bulk of his career over the past 2 or 3 games. But otherwise, this looks like a defense he should shred.
Yeah, and I want to tight end them to death because their safeties are left on tight ends coming right at them. And, you know, for most teams, if you don't have a great pass-catching tight end, that guy's just going downfield and, like, whatever, block the safeties and just take them out of the play. Michigan likes to throw to their safeties. They haven't done it very much.
Tight ends.
But they're tight. They like to throw to their tight ends. And these tight ends versus those safeties is going to be a mismatch.
Like, okay.
This would be a good opportunity to, like, I know Eubanks' first touchdown was against Indiana on that scissors play, and that is absolutely the kind of thing that these guys would go for.
All right.
So that would be my attack on them, and they like to just insert their linebackers because they're small guys, so they're just going to run them at a gap, and they don't care if it's the right gap or not.
So some Harbaugh stuff could get some work done?
Yes. So, again, same thing. Bad matchup for Michigan.
Well, and one part of the thing that...
We're a bad matchup for them.
I kind of feel like their SP Plus ranking here is a little bit of a mirage because they're 34th, mm-hmm. I believe. But that includes like the game where Rutgers passed for 1 yard. And, you know, Northwestern, they beat them like 34-3. And like, I just don't think playing Northwestern and Rutgers has any bearing on what you do on defense,
right,
like, against football teams.
Well, I mean, and Indiana's, if you look at what doing, they've been trending up during the season too, but
a little bit,
Michigan.
But I'm just going to leave out the fact that they got clunked by Ohio State, because that'll happen.
Uh-huh.
But they gave up 450 yards to Michigan State,
uh-huh,
and 40 points. They gave up 34 points to,
yeah,
I believe Nebraska. They gave up 28 to Maryland.
Yeah,
we just saw, yeah, Maryland. And they gave up 34-35 to Penn State. So any like functional-ish offense they've played has put up at least 28. And, you know, their run defense against those teams, once you get rid of sacks, is 4.8 yards a carry. So, like, I just think that they're in trouble.
I mean, the setup for, like, a stupid Indiana game that Michigan always seems, yeah, to get into – The setup for that this year is they have a lot of guys who are kind of just making it work because, like, they're really using their best attributes and they have a lot of bad attributes on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, every once in a while, like, one of those things will pop out. Like, Micah McFadden, their middle linebacker, fast guy. You could see him on any Wisconsin team in the last few years. He has to change direction all of a sudden and falls down. And that turns, okay, a play into, you know, that turns a 10-yard play into a 40-yard play. And, so, like, those things happen to them all the time because, like, a lot of them are just barely hacking it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're going to expect Michigan to score about 30 points in this game, if not maybe a little bit more, just based on what they've done against,
yeah,
the other offenses.
Yeah, a normal game against them would be like a 30-14 game, I think.
So, and then you're relying on the Indiana offense to put together a lot of long drives because they're not very explosive. Michigan doesn't give up a lot of big plays, so unless they're able to, like, army their way down the field, which doesn't seem particularly like
Akron their way down the field.
They're gonna get a couple of scores, but
Purdue their way down.
I know I'm defying the Indiana stupid, but I look at this and I agree with you. It doesn't seem like a very good matchup for Indiana.
Well, that's the setup for Indiana stupid. It's got to, like, you know, we have to go in thinking it's gonna be 30-14, yep, and then all of a sudden,
and then
30-4.
Michigan Wolverine is great. To me, a Michigan Wolverine is great.